Blog Talk Radio.
How did you lose them? The treatment for my spine affects my DNA.
You sacrificed your power so you could walk.
I sacrificed my power so that I could sleep. What do you know about it?
I've lost my fair share.
Dry your eyes, Eric. It doesn't justify what you've done.
You've no idea what I've done.
I know that you took the things that mean the most to me.
Well, maybe you should have fought harder for them.
If you want to fight, Eric, I will give you a fight!
Let him come.
You abandoned me! You took her away and you abandoned me!
Angel. Azazel. Emma. Banshee. Mutant brothers and sisters, all dead! Brothers, experimented on, butchered. Eric, where were you, Charles? We were supposed to protect them. Where were you when your own people needed you? Hiding. You and Hank, pretending to be something you're not. Eric. You abandoned us all.
Skills.
You're now listening to 13 Revolution Radio.
Turn me off. Cover your ears. Because you don't want to hear this kind of truth.
You ain't got time to be playing around. You got to learn all you possibly can to make it in this world.
We're exposing this thing today.
It's not the money that buys you a future. It's your skills that buy you a future.
And we ain't got no time to fool around with people who are just playing at this.
And now, here's your host, Minister Dawood Mohammed.
When we come back, I want to talk about something that Charles Barkley said. Now, if you don't know who Charles Barkley is, he used to play for several teams in the NBA. Let's hear what he had to say.
We as black people, we're never going to be successful, not because of you white people, because of other black people. You know, when young black kids, you know, when they do well in school, the loser kids tell them, oh, you're acting white. And for some reason, we are brainwashed to think if you're not a thug or an idiot, you're not black enough. If you go to school, make good grades, speak intelligent, and don't break the law, you're not a good black person. So it's a dirty, dark secret in the black community.
Okay.
What do you say, Ron?
We're going to talk about it when we come back.
Do you
agree or disagree with Charles Barkley?
You want me to translate real quick?
800-585-1051. Translate, sir.
Niggas be hating.
Assalamu alaikum. In the name of Allah, came the person of Master Fraud Muhammad. I bear witness there is no God but Allah. I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is his last and greatest messenger. And we of the 13 Revolution family can never thank Allah enough for our leader, the Honorable Minister Lewin X. Brothers and sisters, I greet you once again with the greeting words of peace of Assalamu Alaikum. It is my pleasure, my humble honor to be here tonight once again to have the blessing and opportunity to come on these airwaves and bless them with the wisdom and knowledge and understanding that was developed in me by the boldest, the greatest black man I ever met in my life, the man whom I refer to as the Honorable Minister X. I'm so grateful to Allah for those of you who have taken time out of your busy schedule to hear what we have to say, because there's many things you could be doing, although if you are where I am, it is freezing outside, and I was out there all day today quite frankly, brothers and sisters, I'm very tired. I have some things that I have to do this week, some new challenges in life and things like that, which are actually positive. But I'm going to spend an hour with you tonight and try to flesh out this topic and do the best I can. I must, admit that I don't have all the audio I really, really wanted for this show. It's not going to be a 13 Revolution experience like you used to, but it's going to be more so a discussion, more so than it is, the artistic expression of the music that I usually have. So please forgive me and bear with me and try to concentrate on the picture that hopefully Almighty Allah blesses me to paint for you, when and as we go through what we go through today. And so I'm grateful to Allah that you're here today. Let me read this to you real quick before we go any further. This is on page 177 of Message to Black Man. It says, "My followers and I are being accused of being un-American. We actually do not know what is American and what is un-American, as the United States of America has not instructed us as to what constitutes an American and an un-American. Recently, the California State Senate fact-finding subcommittee on un-American activities, in their 11th report to the 1961 regular California legislature in Sacramento, California, on pages 131 and 138, under the heading, "The Negro Muslims are charging us with being un-American, that we now operate a school for the indoctrination of young Negroes with race hatred." And I say again, under the heading of "Negro Muslims are charging us with being un-American, that we operate a school for the indoctrination of young Negroes with race hatred." Brothers and sisters, let me start from the bottom and work my way to the top. If you listen to the clip, this clip by Charles Barkley, this is something that many people have been talking about for a long time. Charles Barkley, Steve Harvey, Karl Malone, said other black people, doesn't matter what shade of black you are, you could be light, you could be dark, we're all saying kind of the same thing. And I won't say we because I ain't saying it, but there's a lot of us as people that are saying this. And basically what they're trying to do is take the shift off the oppressor, the blame and the burden off the oppressor, place it on our shoulders, which I can understand that mentality and the truth to some of what you're saying. But the reality of the situation is, when you really look far into it, the problem is not what a lot of you brothers and sisters are making it. See, as a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and a student of my teacher, the Honorable Minister Lewin X, as an independent thinker, I tend to look at which way the crowd is going and try my best to go opposite. I don't want to go opposite to my detriment. I don't want to go opposite to your detriment, but I want to go opposite because generally the crowd is moving in the wrong direction. And so therefore, when I look at exactly what is being said and how it's being said, for me, it's a little bit too easy for you to just say Charles Barkley is a coon, Karl Malone is a coon, Steve Harvey is a coon, he's a race traitor. I can't believe they're saying this. They sold us out. The civil rights generation sold us out. It's easy for a lot of y'all to say that. It really is. And mind you, I'm not defending these gentlemen, but what I'm saying is that the problem that makes them come out of their mouth with the offensive and stupid things that they say goes way deeper than you just labeling with a coon and keeping it stepping. It's much deeper than that. And you're being lazy if that's all you're going to do, because you have to look at a macro, micro situation, but look at how it relates to the macro situation at large. And so this weekend, there's a movie that has debuted, and this movie is called 50 Shades of Grey. And for whatever reason, this is white folks' chance to delve into what's called the BDSM lifestyle. I don't know if you know what that is. If you do, go look it up, because I ain't talking about it. It has something to do with sexual domination, sadomasochism, dominance, you know what I'm saying, stuff like that. I could care less about that. I could care less about one white person, dominating another with handcuffs and whips and chains and stuff like that. But the thing that I want to focus on and extract wisdom from for our messages or our discussion is shades of gray. Shades of gray. Now, brothers and sisters, listen. As a younger man, when I first came to the Capital Region, I came to the Capital Region had no job, no money, no nothing. My mom, my aunt, and my grandmother, I had flunked out of college, and they sent me up to to the capital region on a promise that my brother would watch me, basically supervise me, keep me on the right path. They figured that if I stayed in Brooklyn, I was going to get in trouble. I would get in trouble anyway, to what extent they didn't really know. But they was like, oh, we're going to send you up there with your brother. You just got out of college. He's going to, put you on the right path. And so I come up here, and I really, don't have any connections or anything like that. I end up getting a job making $100 a week. But here's the thing. The thing about this job is it's not a normal job. It's a program. And in this program, they give you the opportunity to, basically have job placement and what's not necessarily a job but a career. So here's my first instance with the shades of gray. So I come in there, and simultaneously while I'm there, I run into some brothers who were opening up the mosque right across the street. And, I end up accepting my own and becoming a registered Muslim. So, of course, when you first come into knowledge or consciousness or knowledge itself, your mouth has no filter on it, it has no lock on it, and you don't know it any better. So you begin to try to preach wherever you go. And listen, brothers and sisters, this happens whether you are a Muslim, whether you are a Moor, whether you are Afrocentric, as in Kemetian. It doesn't matter what you do. When you first come into out of darkness, into God's marvelous light, or the ancestors of the universe's marvelous light, you have no choice but to say what you got to say, whenever you say it. And you should be like that. Because at first it kind of makes you angry you didn't know what you knew, but then you become so joyous that you want to share with everybody. The problem arises when you're in a system of racism, white supremacy, and you're running your mouth every 5 damn minutes about what you just learned, whether it be at the lecture hall or at the mosque, the temple, the masjid, whatever it is, the tabernacle, whatever it be, and you're on your job doing so, and you're there to make money. You're there to support yourself, eventually to support your family. So here's what the problem is. The problem is that the system that you have now are still inserted in, this system demands that you bow down. It doesn't want to hear about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. It doesn't want to hear about Noble Drew Ali. It could care less about Marcus Garvey. It doesn't give a damn about the Houthi, Heru, Horus, Osiris, and Isis. All it cares is if you're going to show up and give your energy, your blood, your sweat, your tears, your time, your mental energy and exertion to the detriment of your health, your family, and your people, and it could care less about anything else. So what happens is this. What happens is this. Is when you think that you're going to come on the job as a black person, they don't like that. And they're going to hold you back. However, if you think you're going to come on the job as a white person, they don't like that. And they're going to hold you back. Now you say, well, what do you mean, Minister Dawood? Listen, brothers and sisters, I've seen brothers and sisters who come on a job blacker than the blackest black and act as white as you possibly can. I mean, whiter than you could possibly imagine. Talk with with their lips curled up, with their nose all sharp and trying to be all proper and stuff like that. And that just offends white folks. So basically, what do you need to do as a black person to excel? What do you need to do to have upward mobility? What do you need to do to have some kind of financial and physical freedom? And the reality is this here. When you, in fact, do what they say, walk like they say, talk like they say, and do not show any kind of color, basically what happens is you have to turn gray. You have to basically assimilate into the system. You basically have to bow down and do what they say. You basically, as neutral, as quiet, as unseen, as undistinguished as you possibly can, and basically, in some ways, this is what Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, Steve Harvey, Stephen A. Smith, Bill Cosby, and the rest of these people that you label coons are saying. What they're saying is, for you to be successful, Negro, you have to turn gray. Whatever shade of gray you have to turn, you have to turn gray. And this is the problem. The problem is very simple. The problem is that when you have learned some kind of knowledge, wisdom or understanding, you don't want to turn gray. You don't want to fit in. You don't want to shut up. You want to be able to say what you want to say. Because the reality of the situation is you're going to start hearing stuff about black people. It's going to offend you. Well, you know, your people don't do this. Is it true that black people do that? Why does your hair look this way? How come your baby is that? What kind of name is Shakwaja? What kind of name is Raheem? What kind of name is, you know, and so therefore what ends up happening, brothers and sisters, is that either you're going to make a decision. Either you're going to be black or you're going to turn gray. And the reality of the situation is, the question I want to ask you is, whose fault is that? Is that Steve Harvey's fault? Is that Bill Cosby's fault? Is that Karl Malone or Charles Barkley's fault? Or is it everybody in the black community's collective fault that we have not yet band together to put together our own system, infrastructure, land, and nationhood so that the people don't have to turn gray, that they have their own infrastructure? You see, brothers and sisters, the reality of the situation is this. When you look at the color gray is a mixture of black and white mixed together. Equal amount of black a larger portion of black and a smaller portion of white. And the more white that you add to the black, the more it turns gray. Likewise, if you have a large portion of white, you add a little portion of blue. You see where I'm going with this? Do you see where I'm going with this? The more you integrate, the more that you mix it, and the more you make one color disappear in the other, the better and the clearer shade of gray that you have. And when we as a people, when we now, here it is, it's 2015, and it's so many years from the Civil Rights era. It's so many years from the Black Power era of the early 90s and the late 70s, the 80s, and the early 90s. And we are still talking about what entertainers, athletes, and singers are doing. And we are still blaming them for saying this and saying that. That hurts your feelings. That makes you feel bad. That makes you, you know, look down and you want to discuss it around coffee, around the cooler at work. And the reality of the situation is that it's a coward's move for us to sit here and think about or just focus on what these men are doing when in reality you and I have not worked very hard in order to put together a better physical context so that our people coming up, our young, don't have to turn a shade of gray. And the reality of the situation is, brothers and sisters, this. When you look at the color gray, when you look at you turning the color gray, there's no longer a contrast. You're no longer unique. You're no longer standing out. You're basic, boring, stale gray. So basically, to make a long story short, brothers and sisters, at this particular program, that they wanted to place you in a career. As I was running my mouth every 5 seconds talking about what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, what racism, white supremacy was about, this, that, and the next thing. Although coming through the discipline of the teacher Honorable Elijah Muhammad, my wear was sharp, you know, my face was clean cut. I mean, I looked the way that they wanted me to look, but my behavior and my attitude was not the way they wanted it to be, because I was too black for them, and I did not turn gray. And what I saw was all my other coworkers who may have had less education than me or may have had less polish than me, they took them for internships and placed them into jobs for one basic reason and one reason only, mostly the women too, by the way, and that is that they valued their ability, they being the powers that be, valued their being my fellow coworkers, they valued their ability to turn gray. You understand what I'm saying now? Turning gray is the ultimate integrational tactic. It's the ultimate homogenization tactic. It's when you suppress who you are. It's when you suppress your creative ability and your dignity as a black man or black woman. When you suppress all of that for one simple reason and one reason only, because you got mouths to feed, because you have hopes, dreams, and aspirations. And maybe you don't want to drive a hoopty for the rest of your life. Maybe you don't want to ride, you know, the metro, the bus, or the train. Maybe you don't want to do that anymore. Maybe you don't want to file for food stamps. Maybe you just basically, you've decided that you've had enough. You see, for me, brothers and sisters, I came up, first off, I came up in a culture that stressed discipline, that stressed intelligence, that stressed restraint, but also in stress basically the value of getting good knowledge. I was fortunate enough to come under a man, my teacher, the Honorable Mentoring X, a man who believed in getting knowledge, but a man that did not believe in getting senseless knowledge, would suppress you from reading everything, would suppress you from reading every book that came into your hands. And you may say, well, that all, you know, that was religion, that was control. No, that was him being sane and teaching you how to be sane, because the reality situation is that you can't read everything and you can't process everything. And so to make a long story short, brothers and sisters, I came up in this culture, and when we were a part of the nation we were a part of, they stressed with spirituality. The spirit is willing and the flesh is weak. You know, it is more, what does it profit a man if he gains the world and he loses his soul? All of these spiritual sayings. Everything was about spirituality. Like, materialism was about being, you know, it basically was about being the devil. It was about being like the white man. It was about being a part of his wicked system. And, you know, the wisdom of this world is foolishness in the eyes of God. All of these things that was told to us so that we would focus on quote-unquote spirituality and not focus on our economics. Eventually, I grew older in the movement, and I grew older within self, and I realized, you know, I had children and stuff like that. I eventually began to focus hardcore on my finances. So as I was focusing on my finances, then I still maintained my spirituality, but I did still, there was something that was missing. And what started to get me aggravated was very simple. It's not the nation that made me aggravated. It's not the teaching. It's not the temple. It's not anybody else. But what made me aggravated is the fact that I wanted to be pro-black. I wanted to love my people. But when I did what I chose to do in order to feed my family as well as feed myself and feed my competitive and creative desire, I had to turn gray. I had to be somebody by day and somebody else by night. You know, brothers and sisters, there's so much more we're going to get into with this. But the reality of the situation is this here. 13 Shades of Gray represents a contrast of what it is to be a man, a black woman in this world who is not settling just for spirit, just for energy, just for esoteric, just for metaphysics, but a person that is trying to build generational wealth, trying to build generational capital, and trying to build generational stability, but at the same time wants to stay a fighter for their people, a person that wants to see change for their people, and basically the only way that you could see change for your people and still build wealth and generational capital is to begin to focus on land, infrastructure, and nationhood. We'll be back.
I think what you're trying to ask is why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture. I think that's what you're asking. It's, I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
And we're back, brothers and sisters, and I I guess I've been talking for like a couple of minutes and I've been on mute. I am terribly sorry. When I want to get my creative juices going, my creative nationalist juices going, I lean on this particular book because this book talks about, in a very comprehensive way, it deals with the struggles of, and the book title of the book is The African Woman in Revolution. It's a book that deals basically with the struggles of black women in Africa in various different countries and provinces while they went through their revolution. And let me just say this to you, brothers and sisters, if you are a Muslim listening to this show, a follower of Elijah Muhammad, if you're a so-called whatever you are, and you get tired of me referring to Africa or talking about Africa, then quite frankly, you need to find another blip on the radar or another channel on the radio, because the time for us to stop talking about such and not learn about such is over. There is similarities in a lot of different things that we have gone through as a people over on the continent, here in America and elsewhere. Nobody's limiting you to that continent, but the reality of the situation is, guess what? Your people are there, fool. And so therefore, don't you think we need to know something about what they went through and how it relates to what we went through and how we can both overcome it? And there's several other things I'm going to say, but the reality of the situation is that good, bad, or indifferent, the writer of this particular book is called The African Woman in Revolution. The writer of this particular book basically diagrams and draws out a very comprehensive picture of the oppression and subjugation, not only of black African people, but of black African women after black African men and women. Because understand that women go through a different kind of struggle sometimes, and they're already looked at as second-class citizens by men. So then when you come out and you double it by making, you know, with it being their men as well as white men, it's a struggle, it's a challenge. And when we're here in America, it may seem like it's different, but not very different. The only difference is in America, the system of racism, white supremacy lifts them up over us. However, we still have a lot of things going on that's similar to what's going on. Either way, let me just read this to you. It says, by 1990, an accumulation of discriminatory legislation and economic policies have managed to produce a deeply divided society. White South Africans reserve for themselves the best jobs, the best schools, nearly all the land, and all political power. Does that sound familiar to you? They bulldoze entire black suburbs because they disliked having black communities living too near white ones. Does that sound familiar to you? Those who resisted were treated viciously. Policemen gassed and whipped children, police gassed and whipped children at rally after rally in black townships. The prosperity and affluence that white South Africans enjoyed was built on the blood and sweat of Africans. It would not be historically accurate to characterize this affluence as being the result of white ingenuity, enterprise, and effort. And I say again, it would not be historically accurate to characterize this affluence as being the result of white ingenuity, enterprise, and effort. So therefore, think about that for a second as I go into this particular subject. Okay, so the color gray. The color gray can be made or manufactured by mixing white and black. But the color gray can also, brothers and sisters, be made by a lot of other combinations. But here's the catch. The catch is, and I know this as an artist, the catch is that these colors have to be what's called complementary colors. In other words, you have purple and yellow. Those are complementary colors. You have blue and orange. Those are complementary colors. You have green and red. Those are complementary colors. And when you put all of these together, your art teacher will tell you that when you put yellow with a purple background, it vibrates. But the reality of the situation is if you put them together in a mix, they turn gray. You understand what I mean? So understand, and I say again, when you use complementary colors and you put them together in a mix, they end up turning gray, okay? So think about it this way. When you hear me speak on infrastructure and you say, I am so tired of that man talking about infrastructure, why does he not talk about the original man? Why does he not talk about God? Why does he not talk about the ancient aboriginals? Why does he not talk about the Well, it's for one very simple reason, my dear brother and sister. It's very simple. And what it means is this here. The reason why we champion infrastructure is because we know that infrastructure brings complementary colors together and makes them all neutral. What do I mean by that? What I mean is this here. You see, for the most part, you can look at various social media, such as Facebook, to some degree Instagram, more so Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. Ever since we have been on social media, we have not done a damn thing together as a people. We have groups where we do things. And the BAIO, we're doing things. My brothers and sisters in the law group are doing things. You may be doing things in your group. I'm not trying to say that you're not. But as a whole, as a united front of, let's say, 10,000, 14,000 brothers and sisters, 50,000 brothers and sisters, come on, brothers and sisters, you know damn well we're not doing anything together. We are actually rooting for division, controversy, anger, and conflict. And so, therefore, what happens is that we all draw up our colors and we stay on our side. I wear the red, black, and green. You wear the red and white as a star and crust. You wear whatever goddamn color you wear as a Hebrew. You wear whatever color you wear as a Moor. And we all stay in corners. But the reality of the situation is if you're going to talk nation building, you need something to make everybody neutral. In other words, you need something that's going to make everybody turn gray. You need something that's going to make everybody's ideology completely irrelevant and make it to the point where these brothers and sisters can rely on our brain power, our ability to hunt, gather, create, and manufacture. That's what we need. And so, therefore, when you look at infrastructure, brothers and sisters, think about it this way. With all of the BS that's going on in the conscious community, with all of the WrestleMania stuff, with all of the infighting going on with the Muslims, you guys don't believe in Elijah Muhammad. You don't believe in Farrakhan. You don't believe in this one. You don't believe in that one. With all the black power coon watch, this person's a coon, that person's a coon, this person doesn't do this, this doesn't do that. With all of that going on, it's very hard for us to come together and address the fact that if you want to make money and build capital in America, you have to turn gray. You cannot walk around and be defiantly black. You cannot walk around and be a person that challenges the authority, because eventually you are hunted down, you are brought down, your money is minimized, your ability to earn is minimized. You can't do what you need to do. Meanwhile, as my dear brother Holder posts almost every other day on Facebook, there's some new Republican coming out saying some retarded statement about black people, and nobody is limiting their money. Nobody is limiting their resources, their ability to build capital, and leave generational wealth. So you tell me. You tell me, is it equal? Is it even? Can we make those statements about white people and still make billions of dollars? Can we come out and say that all of their children need to be exterminated and still make billions of dollars? Because that's what they say about us. Can we limit, can we say that we need to take their history out of the school books and still make billions of dollars? And how about something that my dad always says? When, in fact, you say, well, you got a black president, did you ever reach in your pocket and pull out a dollar, a coin, a nickel, a penny, a dime, anything with a black face on it? Did you ever pull out any money with a black face on it? Of course you did not. And so the reality of the situation is, brothers and sisters, when you talk infrastructure, because Obama is talking now about how he wants to have a job creation bill, and a huge portion of the creation bill has to do with infrastructure. Obama is doing this. They've done this in a lot of other countries. Now, I'm not saying I'm pro-Obama. I could give a damn about Obama, to be very honest with you. I defended him in his first term because we didn't know much, but now that we know what we know, he needs to go and life needs to go on. However, when you talk about infrastructure, infrastructure does not give a good goddamn about who you are. It doesn't care what God you pray to. It doesn't care how you greet each other. It doesn't care what book you refer to. It says, can you hold a pen? A shovel? Can you hold a pick? An axe? Can you hold a hoe? And can you do what you need to do to make this city keep going day by day, year, hour by hour, year by year? And so therefore, brothers and sisters, infrastructure provides jobs. Infrastructure feeds businesses, small and large. Infrastructure also feeds the state, and by extension, the nation, because infrastructure, i.e. highways, railroads, seaports, you know, power grid, sewer grid, information grid. These things all, by extension, feed the nation, and all of us have to pay to use it. So it feeds the nation and the state. It feeds small businesses because you need contractors to maintain it, to install it, and to create it. And it also provides jobs because once all of the thinking is done, then it requires people to come in and basically build it. And think about it this way, brothers and sisters, because you want to know something? I am a huge advocate of brothers and sisters going above and beyond what they think their means are. I'm a huge advocate of you and I as a people really grinding down and putting our minds to high-earning skills, but not just high-earning skills, but basically highly intelligent skills. And when Charles Barkley says that black people are never going to succeed because of black people, that's a half-truth, okay? It's not that we are never going to succeed. However, what has stopped us from succeeding to some degree is other black people trying to make it uncool and try to make it make you the black sheep or the white sheep of the crowd when you try to use your brain to do, you know, when you basically try to operate by using your brain, your intelligence. And this is because a lot of us as a people have not invested enough in our children. So the jealousy creates peer pressure, and the peer pressure then is exerted on those children who are trying to shine. So you send your children out, and you send them amongst other children who may not have a good stable family background. And the other children begin to tease them because they use their mind and they use their creative ability, and these children have not been trained or taught to do that. And so therefore, no, that does not mean that we will never succeed, but it is a problem. And the problem can be solved by investing in, building in, and committing ourselves to land infrastructure with a big I and nationhood. So the bottom line, brothers and sisters, is this. The bottom line is that in the confines of our own nationalism, infrastructure doesn't give a damn if you're black. Infrastructure doesn't give a damn if your religion, your culture, your ideology is on the black side. It doesn't give a damn if your religion, your culture, your ideology is on the white side. But for its maintenance and for its success, we must all turn gray. We'll be back.
Is this what you want to be their entertainment, their playthings? Their pets? Cowering beneath a whip. And then fighting amongst ourselves. Is this what you want?
I've lived by their rules my entire life. I've protected them. Envied them. And for what? Treated like an animal.
We are not animals! We do have a choice! We can choose to be more than this! We can be slaves! Or we can be!
And we're back, brothers and sisters, and I think that we are drawing the topic out. I hope that you are being patient with it. I think that you will continue to hear certain things that maybe you've never heard before and then some things that you have heard before. But I myself am not in the mood to try to drop, you know, high juice. I mean, I just want to basically put something in a usable form that you and I can really think about. If it's your first time hearing 13 Revolution, then you can understand this is where we're coming from. We are a black man and black woman. We follow Zion and Black Muhammad. We are part of the Black African Infrastructure Organization. We're part of the Allah Group. And we believe that the Black Power movement goes through three stages, revolution, reconstruction, and renaissance. We believe that we as a people need to usher in and usher our people closer to the reconstruction, because the reconstruction of high black society is what will solve the problem of men like Karl Malone, Bill Cosby, Stephen A. Smith, and Steve Harvey from turning gray. And mind you, we do not let these men off the hook for the ignorant, insensitive, and imbecile comments that they make. But what we are trying to do is we're trying to tell you that it's a bigger problem than these fools just saying what they say. They have to make their money and take care of themselves and by proxy their families, so they're turning gray to do so. And if you're going to sit back there like a damn hypocrite and try to act like you don't turn gray every day, yeah, you don't have a microphone. Yeah, you don't have the same audience and the same kind of following that these athletes do have. But you turn gray every damn day. And if you're one of those cats out there that basically doesn't do anything but sell incense and oil and say, well, I'm not going corporate, well, maybe you don't turn gray then. Maybe you don't. But one thing I do know, and I'm not clowning you for this, is very simple to me. That means that if you got children, I just wonder how much you're giving to your children every month. If you got children that eventually will grow up, what legacy are you leaving them? And to be honest, so I'm not saying you got to work for the man. I'm not saying that even what I'm basically saying is this, is that I hate, and I'm going to do a show on this one day when I get my thoughts together on it. I hate this whole I'm not corporate stuff, because to me, that is another excuse for the black man to be dusty as hell and live off it. But anyway, that's another segment. Listen, brothers and sisters, let's deal with some science for a second, okay? And again, remember what I said, I don't teach on stuff that I don't work on. So if I teach on it, it's something I worked on, and if I work on it, I'm going to explain it. And quite frankly, when you hear, I can hear somebody from across the galaxy talking about something that they never touched, and it just makes me grit my teeth, because I know you read that somewhere, but you don't know what the hell you're talking about. So either way, knowledge is, brothers and sisters, when it comes to powering electronics, and really even the human body also, but electronics, there are some times where you need AC, which is alternating current, and there's some times where you need DC, which is direct current. Alternating current is current that basically goes out on one line and comes back on another line. However, it goes out and it changes polarity. Polarity. Do you know what polarity is? Polarity is basically positive and negative. So it's poles. And when you're on one side and somebody's on the other side, this is where they get that saying, this person is polarizing. Like they say, Michael Vick is polarizing. You know, they make white people be more white because they love dogs, and make black people be more black because we love our own people. But that's neither here nor there. So anyway, either way, when you power something, it either takes AC voltage or DC voltage. Most electronics like to have DC voltage because electronics are sensitive and very finicky, and they're basically looking for something to come out positive and send it back negative. They're not looking for AC. It doesn't like AC pretty much. So either way, there are times, though, where you have a power supply, and the power supply is an AC power supply. And if you want to hook up an AC power supply to a component that takes DC, then the average person would think they're screwed, but what you would do was you would place in parallel with the power supply, between the power supply and the component, you would place what's called a rectifier or a diode, but we call it a rectifier. And what the rectifier does is it blocks one side and it passes another side. In other words, as your current is alternating from positive to negative, it will block the negative and pass the positive, and then sometimes it will block the positive and pass the negative. The negative and pass the positive. One way or the other, it blocks it. A full bridge rectifier blocks both in certain instances. And so therefore, what happens is this. Once you put in a rectifier that stops it from being AC and converts it to DC, then you have to understand that power has to go somewhere, because it doesn't just disappear in the sky. And so therefore, when it does block that voltage and it just passes one leg, then that one leg comes in double powerful. You feel me? So now listen, you may have to listen to this 3 or 4 times to follow what I'm saying. And this is why I laugh when these dudes be teaching you about electricity and magnetism, because, again, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. But the reality is this. We're going to use a scientific device and process to explain a real-world stressful situation that you and I, as black men and black women who are consciously aware, go through every single day. Understand this, brothers and sisters. For you to be a Muslim, for you to be a, what's it called, for you to be a Hebrew, for you to be a Moor, for you to be an African, for you to be whatever it is that you are that has made you consciously aware, and for you to be quote-unquote corporate and go into their system, basically what you have to do is either you have to install a self-imposed rectifier or they have to teach you how to use a rectifier. And when this happens, what this means is this here. It means that only a certain amount of you can show up on that job every day. And so you're asking yourself, how come it's so hard for me to be here 100%? How come it's so hard for me to fit in? And you're wondering why in the world, every time I come here, I can't give my all, everybody else gives their all. You know that whatever culture that you've become a part of have made you super intelligent, super focused, super disciplined, but you still can't excel the way you need to excel in the corporate world, sometimes in the business world, or wherever. And the reality of the situation is that you have installed a rectifier, and now that side of you that basically they're calling for you, you're drawing double from you, and you're not able to pass the other side of you, which is the side that loves their people, has racial pride, and wants to see your people free and get an honest leg up. And so in a circuit in which you use a rectifier to pass only DC and not AC, in order to smooth it out, what you do is after you have a rectifier, you put in what's called a capacitor. And a capacitor is basically a small device that absorbs electricity and stores it in the static field and passes it in smooth, usable amounts. It basically takes the double because the double amount of one leg is called ripple. So it takes the double or the ripple and it smooths it out into easy, clean, usable energy. And so what I'm saying to you today is this here. Because we keep getting into this argument about, well, what is the answer to the problem? The answer to the problem is we need to control our legislators. The answer to the problem is we need to march so that we can be recognized. The answer to the problem is this answer to the problem is that. That's nothing more than a stupid rectifier. It's not going to give you long-term relief. It's not going to give you long-term satisfaction. And what ends up happening is when you do stuff like that, it causes you to pass a certain side of you, and it causes you to pass it double. In other words, if you have turned gray, and now you have to fit in, now you have to talk like they want you to talk, you have to do it, you end up losing yourself, and you end up overdoing it. You see where I'm going now? So as you end up overdoing it, what ends up happening is you lose yourself in corporate America, or you lose yourself in society, and this is why the average person from the street does not want to go corporate. I can understand that. I really can. We, as a people, we need to get busy, and we need to work more on building our own land, infrastructure, and nationhood. And I don't mean just here in America. I mean someplace else. Because the reality of the situation, brothers and sisters, is that you will never have full nationhood here. You will never have completely, totally independent land here. And you will never be able to, God knows you will never be able to control infrastructure here. So how will you provide the jobs that you need to provide? Yes, brothers and sisters, you can own a business and you can employ black people. You can do that. Yes, you can do that. But realistically speaking, brothers and sisters, the reality of the situation is that to really provide full and complete relief to the 13 shades of gray that you have to turn in order to fit into society, we need our own infrastructure so that we can provide our people better opportunities and allow them to build capital, generational capital, and generational wealth. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. And when I read that particular passage in the book, The African Woman in Revolution, where it talked about the suppression, it talked about the oppression, it talked about the educational system, it talked about all of that stuff. Did that sound familiar to you? I mean, honestly, did that not sound familiar to you? And if you have a traumatic experience in which your people have been raped, murdered, and pillaged, where your people have been dealt wrongly with the justice system and the policing system, any education that you get is going to be taken different by you than anybody else. So when people like because I mentioned these people, so I'm going to call out what they said by name. We're going to leave, we're going to do one more segment, and I'm out of here, because like I said, I'm tired. Okay? Carmelone eventually, Carmelone, which is a former basketball player, power forward, Hall of Fame power forward in the NBA. Carmelone says black people need to stop asking for a handout. Charles Barkley says that black people will never get anywhere because we're not because of white people, but because of black people holding ourselves back. Steve Harvey goes out and says basically he doesn't give a damn about slavery. Bill Cosby comes out in front of colleges, universities, and various different black audiences and starts saying that you won't get no job if you put you name your daughter Shaniqua. We need to pull our pants up and all this other stuff. All of these men had to work very hard to overcome all of these racial barriers and stumbling blocks. And what they're basically telling you is that you need to just place a rectifier in your life and you can do it the same way that they did it. See, my problem is that when you install that rectifier into your life, you're going to get ripple, which means that you're going to have to work double hard, you're going to have to work extra hard, and there's nothing to smooth that out. And this is one of the reasons why black people are dying. Yes, we're eating, you know what I'm saying, bad food. Yes, we're living a bad life. But we're dying earlier, brothers and sisters, because, quite frankly, we are working double hard to get the same damn thing that everybody else is getting. You know, right before I had to make a career decision, and I called up a whole lot of different people. I spoke to a lot of different people. So one day I called up Holip, and we were supposed to be doing something with basically when I was getting his feedback and his body of knowledge for Nationhood for Dummies. I said, brother, what do you think about this? He said, listen, brother man. He goes, you talked about overtime. He said, where I'm at, we had two dudes, and all they was ever concerned about was overtime. He said, and I'm not saying this is going to happen to you. He said, but man, one of these dudes, he took a vacation after working so much overtime. The one dude died. He said, and then with the course of time, and I don't remember whether it was, maybe it was 90 days, maybe it was 6 months or whatever. The other dude that was heavy with overtime died. Do you understand what I'm trying to draw for you? When you have to work double, triple, and quadruple in order to get the same damn thing as everybody else, basically, you have installed a rectifier in your life. You can only pass one side of your personality. You can only pass one side of your being. And because you're holding back your other side, you have to try double, triple, and quadruple. And without something to smooth that out and give it clean, usable dispersal, you end up burning yourself out and giving up and becoming bitter. And this is one of the reasons why black people, we are not dying happy today, because somebody has to band together and solve this problem. And the answer to the problem is right in front of us, but we want to continue to say that the solution is here within the system and the solution is outside of the system. Your teachers taught you separation. They taught you separate territory. They taught you separate religion. They taught you separate culture, separate science. They taught you all of that. And you are now telling people you have to assimilate yourself. And basically all you're doing is telling people, pass one side of your personality and hold back the other side. And you know, again, that energy is not going to dissipate and just go away. It's got to go somewhere. So it causes you to devote double. It's just like basically like this, and I'm going to close out. I got one more segment, I'm going to close out. It's like this. It's like if you had a bad eye, then they say that your other eye basically works double hard. I remember going to an eye doctor, and he said, no, we have to prescribe prescribe some eyeglasses for you because your one eye is not working the way it's supposed to, your other eye is working double hard. You understand what I'm saying? When you have to suppress that side of yourself, you know damn well you can't go on your job and say, my name is Derek Muhammad. My name is Mr. Holipsism. My name is College. You can't go on no job saying that. You can't go into a business meeting saying that. You can't do that. You can't meet. You mean you can't do it. And what happens is that means that you are blocking one side of yourself and you're just passing the other side, quite frankly. And we need land infrastructure nationhood to smooth out the ripple so that our people do not burn themselves out. One more segment, brothers and sisters. We'll be back.
What are you looking at? Get back to work!
Now!
Get back to work!
The matter before the council is simple. We are under attack. Six times in half as many weeks, William's kind have reached our very walls. What mayhem would follow if just one of them got through?
Your fear, Coromon, is misplaced. Are we not protected by an army of immortals?
Superbly, my lord. However, the nobles are not. And as I have pointed out, they are the grass on which we graze.
If we cannot protect our humans, it makes us look weak.
And how would you project strength?
As our death dealers patrol the night, so our daylight guards can patrol the day.
Lycans patrol outside the walls. Have you...
Hello?
No, hello. No.
Oh, okay.
No, I just put a song. But you're right. You're right. Everybody is trying to make a name for themselves, brother. And we're just basically trying to do it for the love.
Yeah, and like I said, we're not making money off this thing, really. You know, we're not doing anything. And we got people out there. You know, I have to call. I'm going to start calling people to the car because I'm like this. I'll leave people alone. If they start embracing our land, and if they basically go against it just because they're out of envy, that person like that is an enemy to me. You know what I'm saying? If you have enough people, imagine if we had the reach that some of these people have, and we put that out there, land infrastructure. Do you know how that would basically make this thing happen overnight? You know what I'm saying?
No doubt.
But people who got reach, all they do want to do is talk about, yo, what religion you are, white Jesus and the Moors,
right.
All this kind of stupid nonsense that mean not a damn thing to me or anybody else. Like you said,
yeah,
the average black person, like I meet a lot of college kids and everything. You're not talking to these kids that got the internet, got intelligence, that can research what you say, and so like get them to listen to you if you're not going to bring something to the table. If you don't like corporations,
right.
Industry, infrastructure, building, you're not talking about that, they don't want to hear what you got to say.
Without a doubt, brother. not a word of what you said.
And that's why I tell people all the time, I said, look, if you have people out there, who said integration was the worst thing to happen to black America. Okay, all right, it was not great. But what was the alternative? You know, at the time period, what was the alternative? People are hungry. They need jobs. They need housing, living, rat-infested housing, you know? They need opportunity. You know, I'm a product of that integration. My father had a good job, you know? You know, because
right.
white people were just, you know, saying, look, we got to do the right thing. You know, not even outside the laws, you know? People say, oh, just hire
right.
them, you know? It's the right thing to do. But we know it had limits. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It worked for a few years, and then white people were like, wait a minute here. Now it's pushing back. Now we're like, well, geez, that's not enough. White people are like, I think we did enough.
To add to what you're saying, that's one of the parts of that particular chapter that I was reading in the African Women in Revolution. They were talking about how basically, as things began to boil down, and this particular segment was dealing with South Africa, and what they were talking about, they were saying that basically the jobs that the whites did not want and the jobs
right.
that, the, you know, that they felt that the men, you know, it basically what they looked at, they looked at black men in Africa, they looked at them as a commodity for heavy, heavy, heavy labor. So therefore,
yep.
they wasn't going to tie them up with, you know, basically meaningful jobs because they was like, no, you should be lifting stuff and doing stuff like that. So those
yes.
are the crappy jobs that they gave the black woman. That, to me, is similar to integration where we had integration and they gave us jobs, but they basically just gave us the jobs that they didn't want to do.
Give the jobs that they want to because their white people were moving up. And their whole generation of them had college education from the GI Bill. And stuff like that. And
right.
they were moving into more white-collar stuff. So they gave us the blue-collar job. That's why you think you have so many black people. Remember Ralph Cramden in the 50s was a bus
mm-hmm.
driver, you know? 60s
mm-hmm.
and 70s, you don't see no white bus drivers. All black people, you know? We took over civil service. But we never elevated from that level. My family
right.
came to New York was mostly civil service, you know, working for the city. That's the thing. You get that city job. You pass the test,
right.
you get that city
right.
job. And you win. Get a union, you're really
right.
in. You set for life.
Right.
You know, you could buy a house. My family bought houses in Queens and Long Island and Brooklyn. And you buy a house, send your kids to school. So that was the dream, you know. You know, weekends,
right.
Go to Flushing Middle Park, have barbecues. But those days are over with, you know. Those days are long gone. You know, there's not that one job you're going to retire from and stuff like that. And, you know, it's not happening anymore. You know, so, like I said, we have to get to the point, like you said, high education. We have to master these skills. And we have to make the hard decision that way, you know, nationhood is the future. If you don't think nationhood is the future, then you don't need to be. I'm going to say something, right? And I was thinking about this today, right? Check this out. Like, I'll talk about this on Facebook. I really don't think the leaders, except for Malcolm X back in the days, I would say Meg Evers. I really don't think the leaders of the civil rights movement were intellectually and academically capable of leading black people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Before you get in front of a group of people, right? Malcolm X lacked academics, but he was intellectually and intelligently smart, you know? If he combined the two, all he needed was somebody who had the academics, but there was nobody there to match him within the academic world because all the black people in the academic world are bought off with the white man integration America. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's what happens. They cut the black community off from academia. All our academia is bought on to this idea of inclusion, of changing America, all the stuff that we got to wait generation after generation for, everything. And look what's happening now. A black family in Manhattan Beach, California, had their, a prosperous family, did all the things that they say do, had their house fired, firebombed. They're never going to recover from that mentally, you know? Beautiful family. That's what I treasure. When I see a beautiful black family, that to me is the most beautiful thing in the world, seeing a black man or a black woman or black children. That is those. I want the best for them, you know? I want the best for somebody that says we want to have a family.
Right. But the worst part about that, brother, is that when you achieve that, because I saw the article, I think I saw it on your page, and basically it was saying that the dude got a $350,000 house for like $12, and the white boys was mad at him. And this kind of
That was another case.
I got you.
This was another case in California.
I remember that. Yes, sir, I remember that.
Yeah, Manhattan Beach is a place where they had there was on Discovery Channel. They had those shark attacks, you know, a couple of years ago. Manhattan Beach is a real, real quiet community in outside of Los Angeles and everything. Really quiet, upscale, whatever. And it's a black family, professionals and everything. Had three kids. They're a beautiful family, you know. And whatever it is, whoever it is, don't want them there.
Right. Yes, sir.
You know, and so
this is the thing is, like, for me, this is what I was trying to tell somebody. I don't know what thread I was on the other day, but it was like, you know, Steve Harvey said this, and then, no, I know what it was. It was talking about this sister, Azalea Banks. And basically, you remember that, like, that's the sister that was speaking out against T.I. and the white girl and stuff like that. And now, apparently, she's supposed to be posing nude on the front of Playboy. And everybody was like, oh, you know, you was talking loud, and now you're a slut. See, for me, it's not that I approve of her being on Playboy, because I don't.
Right. But what does one thing have to do with the other? Why discredit what she was saying, you know?
Right. Well, not only that, but for me, it's like, I'm not going to be a hypocrite and sit there and criticize her doing that when I know damn well I'm not out there paying her no money. I didn't buy her album.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So the thing is that if you, again, Negroes, if you don't band with us to provide an infrastructure and provide land and nationhood, do not criticize women like this.
Don't criticize people. What they have to do. You know, and like I said, honestly, you know, I had to come. You know something? It had to take me a lot of. I had my heart broken, and a lot of things had to really realize that, because when I finally realized that these rappers were not really with us, you know, you had that same feeling. You know, back in the mid late 90s, when it was became obvious that what we believed in, the people that were making money, but basically, honestly, we never really had this confrontation, really. But they were basically mocking everything, deliberately mocking what we were talking about. All the things in the Million Man March. And I know most people don't talk about that, but I'm saying somebody being real. How can I basically, Minister Farrakhan, be with Russell Simmons when he's basically putting out messages and promoting stuff that's the antithesis of what you stand for? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And well, then on one hand, I say, okay, he makes money. And then on the other hand, it says, well, we're on our own. We just have to be on our own until we come up with a better way. And then this is what led me to where I'm at right now. Because there's nobody can compete with the idea of an African-American nation state. Because that's
right.
That right there, when that happens, there's nothing anybody can do. No white man, nobody like there's nothing you can compete, put up against that. Nothing.
Right. Right.
We have to deliver that.
Yeah, but to piggyback on what you're saying, I have brothers that are from Canada, like Montreal. And so
yeah. We
were together. I remember when we, like, you know, first was banging together and just chilling, relaxing. So we started talking about hip-hop, and we started talking about our favorite artists. And I was like, yeah, man, you know, I was a big Wu-Tang fan. And next thing I said, well, brother, we're going to hurt your feelings. I said, what do you mean? He's like, brother, listen, J. Rude the Damager, Wu-Tang, KRS-One. He said, all those dudes come to Montreal, and the first thing they do is they grab these stank white girls. I said, get out of here, brother. They said, brother,
yeah. Listen
to me. They said, brother, the genius left with white girls. J-Rude the Damager left with white girls. I said, are you serious?
You kidding me?
They was like, yeah.
J-Rude the Damager? Oh, my
yes.
God, man.
Ain't the devil happy, J-Rude the Damager.
Yeah. Yeah, and he talking about, yeah, I think the white man's the enemy. Yes, you just mad because that white girl dumped you and whatnot, you know?
Exactly.
And you bitter about that, you know? That's what all the emotion towards white people is. Is when these guys go out there and get their feelings hurt, now all of a sudden they want to be all this, on this all white man, the devil stuff, whatnot. But if you basically handle
right.
your business, you wouldn't even be in that situation to put yourself in. You don't catch your feelings
right.
of white man because nobody can do it with me, you know? You know, you stay around your own women, you stay with black women, stay this, that, and the other thing, and you don't have to be risk being in that. But these guys, like I said, I can't vibe with any. That's why I hate when people put hip hop up there as some legitimate cultural force, as you know what I'm saying? I can't do that.
Right, yes, sir.
You know, I said these guys going where the paycheck is, they're going where the booze is, where the wine is, they're going where the women are, you know, and the
right.
white women, because black girls don't get down like that, you know? As simple as that.
Right. Right. And by the way, the paycheck is a lot harder to come by now for them than it was back in the day, so they got to sell themselves even more.
That's why
you
I said, man, like I said, be prepared. People like, I put a blog out a couple of years ago. NY All backed me up on this, right? And I criticized KRS-One, right? And I was defending Obama, right? And I don't know
right.
why I did that. But like I said, but I criticized KRS-One. And this blog went viral. And then NY All, I said, yo, what should you think about this? And he gave his take on it on his website. He said, yo, Kyle's right. He said, for years, KRS-One has been double-talking, you know? On one hand, he's
mm-hmm.
saying that why are you talking about a commercial? And then Puff Daddy calls him up. When the next thing you know, they're doing a remix, rebuking what he just sung about a month before. You know,
right.
So we have people back and forth. So that's what I'm saying. If you're going to be about the money, I'll respect you more. Like Jay-Z and all these people, 50 is about the money.
Right.
You don't care about none of this.
Right.
I can respect that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I can respect what you're doing. But when people come in and they try to be conscious, and they try to say the other thing. I don't like lukewarm people. If you're going to be hot, it'll be cold, or like that. But when it comes to, you know, this, you know, when it comes to this, in my movement right here, you know, now if you're going to give me, say, look, I do what I do, but I do support what these guys are doing. I can deal with that. You know, I see
right.
what Colin's saying, the minister, I support that. I may be a sinner, and I'm out here, and everything, but what they're doing is right. What I don't like
right.
is when people try to shut us down just to keep continue doing the filth that they're doing. You know what I'm saying? Nah, man, that
oh,
black stuff. This thing, they, but they figured now they can't stop us. You know, we can't be stopped now. So they don't know what to do. So
right.
they're like, they got to make a peace with us. And I tell people, look, we're not going anywhere. Yes, I look
sure,
at
right.
I look at my ratings board. I look at people who look at my archives and whatnot. I'm like this. And I know our last few shows were powerful. And I look how many people have downloaded, archived it. That, in other words, the message is getting out there, and it's multiplying. There's more and more people
no doubt,
saying what we're saying because we're spreading it out there. And the bottom line is you have to contend with that. You know, we have to contend with it. Why do you have a race of people? America has basically said through the police, the court actions, everything, the economy, everything, that basically we do not care about the future of black people. You know, Chicago, never be redeemed. We don't control anything
mm-hmm.
in America, no infrastructure. We have no stock market. We have nothing. Biggest black banks are failing, you know? All this stuff,
right.
everything right now is failing. Black colleges, faculty are becoming white. You know, they're being taken black colleges.
Oh, by the way, brother, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what was up with that post? I remember it was, I think it was yesterday or the day before. You had
Come on with it.
And that fool attacked you. That fool, because basically what you did was you had posted how this black bank in Atlanta has failed.
Oh, and that's that dude Jamari fool. He comes on my post and Holop always says, "Ashley, why don't you ban people?" You know, I said because I'm like I keep my enemies close. You know,
right.
And this guy, right. Every time he looks for any excuse to try to come in and attack me. So I'm like, so in other words, if I'm criticizing the way black banks do business, I'm now against my own people.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well. I said, see, I think you need to try a little harder. Next time you try to slander me and discredit me, think twice before you like that. Try something else. You know, he's always doing that. He comes on my post. Yeah, well, you know, it sounds like you like that. I'm like, and I told him one time, I said, look, man, I don't like to brag on myself. I'm just a guy who do this. I love my community, this, that, and the other thing. I can't help it if I basically, and he's angry because so many people listen to me and so many people follow my blogs and like that, and he's like wondering why people take me, why people like Kyle so much, why people listen to me. I'm like, you know, dude, man, you know, I just tell the truth the way it is. And people vibe with what I'm saying.
Makes sense.
And what makes sense. And I've been doing this for years now. And so the bottom line, if you think you're just going to come out of nowhere and clown me, and whatever, it's not going to work. You know, people know who I am. People
right.
self-taught that I bury my soul to the world, you know, via the internet. So what you say doesn't matter. And he cannot stop me. So he would just wish I would disappear. He would just wish I would go away and stuff like that because he doesn't like my message. I said land infrastructure
initiative. Yeah, but the thing is, you're not going to go away because you're not doing it. You know what I'm saying? Basically, the bill follows.
I'm not building
this,
doing this for money. I'm not doing this
free.
For money. I got my own career. I got my own business and stuff like that. I got my own family. I got everything like that. This is what I believe in. This is my ideology. This is what I believe in. This is what my core, what I believe in. This is what I think I was born for. I was born for this. I know it's the truth. You know, and I know that I want to tell the world the truth. I'm not going to go to my grave a liar and tell them I lived in the land of the free and all that. That's a lie. You know, I'm going to tell it like it is. These people, Marcus Garvey and all these people, didn't die for nothing. I'm not going to let these people die in vain. I'm going to redeem people. I'm going to tell people the world how America destroyed the nationalist movement. We're the only group of people in history. Nationalism and what we're talking about is a natural response to repression. But they make it seem like civil rights and the forgiveness and all this other thing like that, passivity and everything like that is a natural response. No, that's a slave response. So all they're doing is finding individuals in the community like John Lewis and all these people, that civil rights people, that basically practice the slave culture.
No doubt.
And so
that's
why I said.
I'm sorry. That's the thing. We're saying the same thing. That's precisely why I call those people out, is because they are, but at the end of the day, like I said, those are the people who have to turn gray. It's like, brother, let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to bounce because I'm tired and I got to get up early tomorrow. But why in the hell would you sit there and constantly beat on your all of these different people, knowing, we all know exactly what they're doing because we all have to do it ourselves. All
mm-hmm.
these people who turn gray, like, for instance, like Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, I mean, we may not be cleaning like they're cleaning. We may not be running around saying negative things about black people or saying that we need this and we need that. But at the same time, you know exactly why they're doing what they're doing. They're doing what they're doing because they make money being an entertainer. And quite frankly, if they don't turn gray and say what the white people want them to say, they're going to be out of the job.
It's like this. The bottom line is, you know why? Because of the internet, you know? The internet is like this. When these black celebrities are horrified what they see on the internet, they're seeing the real black America and everything. These blogs, they're terrified of the internet. Mm. And they see all this stuff. They see black people, white people going at it on the internet or deep on the internet with stuff back and forth. And basically they're saying, look, if I basically come out, I have to basically – see, before – we had no power over what went on in the social the discourse of America. The internet, because of the internet, black people have a voice now.
Right.
And it's a
right.
voice
no,
a lot of white
right.
America, white America wants to silence because they don't like what
right.
they're hearing.
Right.
You know, they don't like what they're hearing. So basically, they're basically putting pressure. Everything works by pressure. You know, you study physics. Everything works by pressure. Everything has to have
mm-hmm.
pressure. The reason why black people can't get anything in the world because we don't have no pressure. We have no power. We're powerless.
Right.
If you're powerless, you're never going to get anything done. You could cry, talk about the arc of justice will eventually bend towards whatever king said, all that freaking nonsense. No, it don't work. No, it don't work like that. Justice comes with strength and power. That's how you get justice. You know, you're never going to get justice being weak and dependent. And so, therefore, they're putting power, pressure on these things. P. Diddy just put out a video, you know, talking about, look, you better get out there and get it yourself. Ain't nobody going to give you a dime. He's just basically saying, look, nobody going to give you no grown person a dime. We're not, okay, Diddy, that's fine. You know, people bought your clothes. We bought your stuff like that. And you're basically telling people, you know, who's out there struggling, this, that, and the other thing, that you're not my brother. You're not my brother. You're
right.
My brother's
like
keeper.
You did it by
all
yourself.
That just went out the door. You know, you're by yourself. Like you did it by yourself. Like you didn't know. Let me tell you something. I could have told you back, I would say, back in like the early 90s, right? I could have told you early 90s, right? The way black America was so radicalized in the early 90s, right? That somebody like Diddy and Jay-Z were going to come along. I could have predicted it because they were not going to have a hip-hop and the black culture movement change. It changed from being fight the power, all the stuff, revolution, remember, arrested development, all the stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was basically transforming black America, which they know is still radicalized. You know?
Right.
And they basically turned us into get money, get paid, pop Cristal, also. They're still saying the same goddamn thing.
Mm-hmm.
20 years
mm-hmm.
later, they're still talking about Cristal, this, that, the other thing. And these guys, what are you guys going to be, gray haired, 20 years from now? Talking about getting a party. How many times you going to go to a goddamn club, Penny? How many times are you going to be in a club, Jay-Z? You know?
You know what's funny, brother? Like, I was reading this article by the rapper Noriega from Queens. And it was, like, maybe a couple years ago, like 4 years ago. And basically, the person that I had much respect for the interview, and it was like, brother, I just have to ask you something. You know, you making this album is talking about selling cocaine. Don't you think you're too old to be talking about that? And he was like, well... he started dodging around. He's like, there's still drugs out there. He said, but brother, like, you ain't sold no cocaine in like 10, 15 years. What are you rapping about that for? And I had to have respect because it's like, come on, B. Like, if you came from that lifestyle, I can understand that. But 15 years later, you still talking about that? You know you ain't sold no damn cocaine in 15 years. What are you talking about?
Yeah, same to all these people. So, say that's what it is. And they're putting it out there because the people, the CIA, and all these other people, they basically go in. The CIA has a lot of influence on record companies, who gets put on, what gets on the airway. This is warfare. This is warfare. And like I said, and the biggest mistake Minister Farrakhan did was friggin' inviting these rappers alongside with him. He damaged his credibility, and he elevated these people. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like this. I draw a line. I draw a line. You know, I said there's people that's with collar and there's people that's not with collar. You know, NYO is with collar. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because he's doing the right thing. He's down there down in Savannah, Georgia. Him and his wife has opened up a doll store. He's doing good. He said, look, I didn't sell my soul. You know, he quit the rap game because he didn't want to sell his soul. I said, those people out there want to sell their soul? Hey, you go that way. I wish you all the luck. You know, the only time I have it like this, when they do put that mic in front of your thing, what do you think about that, what they're doing and trying to build an African nation? You try to clown us and come against us, we're going to come after you, you know?
Oh,
and that's why,
we
have all the nationalists on that page right there, that's why I said we have to have that central thing. We have to have that idea of a nation state because that's going to be the unifying thing, you know? That's going to be the thing. We have all our differences, but we say like this. But if you talk against that, you know, then you are the enemy. And that's what's going to be. That's what's going to be the litmus test of everybody.
So check
you
it out,
brother.
I got to
going to have a nation.
I got
okay, brother.
I'm sorry. But I want to get the people here off the top because I'm going to be out of town this week. But next week we're going to do, you know, our BAIO show. So here's the thing, and Holt is he can be a fucking genius at times, but that article he posted in the Situation Room where they were talking about basically the article with Mugabe. Remember that article where basically Mugabe tripped and fell and everybody around him got fired because he tripped and fell? But I want to talk about corruption. I want to talk about corruption in the way of, because again, I had been to a lecture, or not a lecture, but basically a presentation by a person that ran security guard services. And they were saying that basically security guard services has so much money in it that they can't stop the corruption. I mean, there's so many people that are running corrupt security guard schools that they can't stop the corruption. So for me, what I would like to talk about with the gentleman from BIO next week is I would like to talk about corruption and how we can deal with corruption when we build a nation state, because that's something that, listen, you don't stop.
I thought about that corruption. The bottom line is this. The people, what I want to do is start a law review, BIO law review. And the people that's going to, except for the honorary members of us, the administration, anybody who joins the BIO law review, these are people that are going to craft the laws, constitution, everything. And we're going to basically try to reach out to HBCU students and top black lawyers and law students around the country, to be in that group, And basically it's going to be, we'll be able to throw things out there and everything like that. And laws dealing with corruption and vetting process and stuff like that, credentialing, the bottom line of this, first of all, has to do with our culture, our value system. That's the first thing, Right. If we basically have the thing where, let me give you an example, right? No, you got to go, right? A couple of years ago, right, when I first moved to Virginia, there was this case where this, in a city like Portsmouth, cities where the town was poor. Most black people there were living, in third world conditions, right? The city manager was a black guy. He's making $150,000 a year, but he was also accused of taking kickbacks, stuff like that. And I'm like, this man's, I said the ungodly thing to these people, I said, how does this man make $150,000 a year when most of the people here are living in abject poverty and he's taking more money and stuff like that? And these people are like, well, he getting paid and whatnot, blah, blah, blah. So bottom line is this. To deal with corruption, you have to have the core people that say, look, this is our values. Our values is this. Corruption is an enemy of the people, your enemy of the state. And then basically, what you do is you sideline individuals. And if people don't feel like that, then you say, look, well, you're not part of us then. If you're part of us, then you're going to be just as angry and outraged that somebody's stealing, somebody's doing corruption, somebody's basically undermining us. Corruption opens up you to attack. That's why when you're corrupt and everything like that, you have to have the maximum penalty. The whole is talking about death penalty. I don't agree with death penalty, but I do believe life imprisonment for corruption.
Right.
And it has to be done so severely, but that has to be so etched in stone that people know when they go into public office or anything like that, that they know that, look, you're in a public trust and that we take our trust seriously. And bottom line is this, if you let that go, then that people don't have any respect for themselves. That's the way it is. Black people, basically, we come from a culture where we let people walk all over us. So how do we get to that point? We have to reverse that. People can come into our community, say they're a leader, take money from us, abuse our women, abuse our women, sleep with our women, and this, that, and the other thing, make babies all over the place, and kill, set people up for death, lie to us, steal from us, and stuff like that, and misrepresent us. We vote for them, they misrepresent us, and they sell us out. And it's okay, because what happens? We're forgiving.
Right.
And it goes back to our mentality, we're forgiving. Why? Because we're powerless. We don't have nothing. We don't covet anything. We have nothing to behold. When you have something, you have a nation, and it's yours, then your attitude has to change. Okay? Your attitude has to change. That's saying, look, we demand accountability backed up by law, and we will punish you if you're not accountable. As simple as that. And that has to be going forward, building BIO, we have to be an example. of what we mean.
Right.
If there's somebody accused of something, we have to know the truth. You know, we have to know the truth. By that, by doing that, that tells, that sends a signal out that we're just not just some other organization. We want integrity. We want people good integrity. We want people to be upright, moral, and clean. And that's the way we want to build. That's the world we want to build. We want to build a world better than what America is.
Without a doubt. Okay, big brother, let me get going. I will speak to you sometime during this week. And
yeah, give me a ring this week anytime, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming on, though, my brother.
No problem, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Peace.
Peace.